Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Good evening, everybody. Hello, how are we? Welcome to this week's edition of Pink and Spaces, the title of which I've kept quite broad and open, simply What Next for Norwich City? We want to hear your views on and thoughts on everything to do with the Canaries. We made the trip back from Derby today after what was a pretty, well, another really grim night, wasn't it, for the Canaries, another defeat. Four in succession. They have now dropped into the bottom three. Sheffield Wednesday obviously playing Middlesbrough tonight. So in theory, that could get much, much worse. And they could, I think, fall to second bottom, which is doesn't make it any better or worse, really. But it's the first time outside of August since that infamous 08-09 season whereby they have been in the bottom three of the Championship. So we want to know, quite simply, what next for Norwich City? How worried are you? What needs to change? Or simply, if you need to come on and have a rant and get some thoughts and opinions out there, we would be very welcome and open to providing you a space to do just that. I can see some requests already coming in. Hopefully you'll have a button somewhere where you will be able to join us. We want to get through as many of you as is humanly possible within the next hour or so. My colleague Samuel Seaman should be joining me very shortly as well for this evening. Let's see if we can get Andrew and Chris into the room to start us off. We can indeed. Chris, let's start with you because I can see you've sort of connected first. So hopefully Andrew will join us shortly. I'll open the floor to you. What would you like to say this evening? Where on earth would you like to start? Because there's plenty to choose from at the minute, isn't there?
Yeah, hello, Connor. Hello, Sam. Before I start, Connor, has like Radio Norfolk, has the Pinkin put a request in to speak to Ben Napper?
Yes, we put a request in over the international break to speak to Ben Napper. That was denied. I think the club are aware, or at least they should be aware, hopefully, that is an ongoing request, and that's something we would always take up. But so, yeah, we have done the same as Radio Norfolk, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, this is a bit of a shambles, really, Connor, isn't it, really? Ben Napper got rid of Torup. He finishes sixth in the... where did we finish last season?
13th.
And he gets rid of him now, right? And now we look like we're really in a relegation battle now. There's no confidence in the team. You've got the club siege mentality of not wanting to speak to anyone about anything, just hoping that things will get a few results out and things will get better. So basically, it's what do the club really care what the fans think?
Yeah, I think that's a fantastic.
I'm not saying they don't love them to hate us, but they, do they care enough to think, or is that a siege mentality going on within the club? I mean, we haven't seen nothing like this for a long while.
No, I mean, I think, and obviously Sam can come in and join us in a moment on this, but it feels to me for a while there's maybe been a view of, rightly or wrongly, and look, sometimes it has been the case and it's been true that you win a few games and it can kind of muddle you through, can't it? And it can it can solve some problems. I think in this case, it feels to me, and look, there's no sense, to be fair, that that they are kind of viewing it as, oh, well, if we just win against Swansea on Saturday, suddenly all our issues go away. But I think there has been that view at points over recent years that actually, if we just win a few games, it can muddle us through. And actually, I think, you know, we spoke a little bit about this on the podcast, actually, and this is kind of where I would be interested to get people's thoughts. And obviously, you can come back at this as well, Chris. I think that perception, that view that they kind of create, whereby, you know, you sell Marcelino Nunez to Ipswich, you obviously manage or don't manage the stadium redevelopment plans in the way that they have done. Obviously, the backlash and obviously that event that I was at last week, which was very spiky as well. It does create the perception, whether it is or isn't the case, and obviously they can only come on and if they want to, and the platform's always here to come and answer that. But I think that perception that actually fans aren't being listened to, or like you say, even cared about.
Sorry to interrupt, Con. The problem is, the longer this go on, it doesn't just turn to a few voices. Then you'll get to a stage where protests will happen. If the longer it goes, protests will happen inside and outside the ground. I'm not calling for it, by the way, but the longer you leave things, people get more angry, yeah? And we don't want to go back to the dark old days when there was protests outside the ground and that. You might think it's a bit dramatic, but if this keeps going, I can generally see it.
Is it the silence for you?
Yes. It's certainly a Manning as well. I mean, you can understand what he's trying to fight on. He's had the fights in his life and in his football career and that. But he seems to think he's doing everything he can, but he doesn't seem to care what the fans think. But you put questions to him in press conferences and that, and he says that we all want to win, the fans want to win and that. But I don't get there's an urgency from the club, Connor, to do anything different.
I feel for Liam in a sense, and interesting to get your view. I recognise that maybe this isn't the popular view, but I feel for him in the sense that actually he is the only one that is speaking. He is the only one that
I'll give him credit for that. Yeah, fully.
And that's difficult for him, I think, because, you know, and I saw it last night when you were constantly having to put questions to people about their futures. Like, it's not a nice thing to do for us isn't a nice thing for those guys.
Oh, yeah, human beings at the end of the day, that's a job, isn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's difficult when he's kind of the only one that is coming out and delivering those messages. Is that where you feel he needs a little bit of help from somebody? I don't know if it is a Ben Knapper or a Mark Attanasio. Maybe that's the question to, I don't know, just come and ease some of, I don't know if pressure is necessarily the right word, but just to provide a different voice and maybe a little bit of an explanation as to why they're sticking with him at the moment.
Yeah, I go back to Stuart Webber, and I didn't like a lot of how Stuart Webber in the end is there, but at the end of the day, when things did, he'd leave it for a while, but he would come out, wouldn't he, in the end? People might not like one know what he heard, and I was one of them, but he would come out and try and explain it, wouldn't he? I don't get the impression Ben Knapper's hiding. He's doing a bit of hiding, and that may be how he is, his personality. But if longer this goes on, like I said to you, Connor, the more toxic. He obviously was at the ground Saturday.
Yep, correct.
And he would have heard at the end there what they're chanting about him.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sam, just to bring you on to this, because I think the reasoning and maybe the feeling as to why some, and look, I think there's maybe an acceptance in the last 24 hours or so that this position may need to change, but it's kind of felt, Sam, like the view maybe has been, well, what could a Ben Knapper say? What could the argument that he could create be that would help shift this on? But I think as Chris has made the point now, it's just, I guess, some semblance of plan and maybe the reasoning as to why there hasn't been change or why there hasn't been movement around Liam Manning or perhaps, you know, some of the, and maybe just a little bit of accountability as well for the position that they find themselves in.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think that explanation is a really important part of it, because ultimately there has to be something that, and I think a lot of people will say, to be fair, that it's maybe a view of his own job and his own career prospects if he does sack Liam Manning. But either way, there's got to be something that Ben Knapper is seeing that means he's keeping Liam Manning in the job longer than a lot of fans would have at this point. So I think it is that explanation factor. And, you know, you kind of reference the argument for him not doing it, which I do understand, because ultimately nothing he says is going to please anyone, but also all of the things that apply to him apply to Liam Manning, and Liam Manning has to speak to the media and justify himself and talk about his own position as much as four times a week sometimes. So I think, although, you know, you can apply that logic to Napa and you can say people would be unhappy with whatever he said, but you can also apply that logic to Liam Manning, and he's the one who has to front up and answer the questions four times a week. So I'm not sure that logic particularly holds when you've got a member of staff going out and taking that responsibility on a really regular basis. And that's not to alleviate Manning of any responsibility. It's just to say that, you know, when you've got a relatively small leadership group, probably four or five people now that are at the top of the club and that people are unhappy with, to have one of them doing all of the explaining, I think... although there's definitely been a lot wrong with his football team, I feel for Manning in that sense, and probably that's part of the reason why I think it is, well, it's overdue that someone else came out and spoke, I think.
Yeah, and Chris, just to sort of come to you, then we'll bring Andrew in.
Yeah.
That's like I say, maybe the argument is, well, what could Ben Napa say? What would you like to hear from him? Is it just an explanation and some responsibility taken, or is there something else, a different message that you'd like to hear him portray?
As we all know, football is the results business, and I would want to know the reason why he's keeping hold of Manning, because at the end of the day, we are in a results business, whether we like Liam Manning or not. He's not getting results. We're sinking further down the table. We can't get much further down the table. Nothing seems to be changing. Can you explain why you're keeping him and for the reason you're keeping him?
That's basically what
I wanted to say, and if the reason you're keeping him is hoping things will get better, then you might not like to hear it, but you've heard something, haven't you?
Yes, you have. And I often think it's and look, there are clearly people who are better qualified to comment on PR than me, but I often always think it's better to say something than nothing. But I can also understand the perspective that, you know, maybe recently it maybe wouldn't have been the best time. It probably does feel like the time for a different voice. And on that front, let's bring in Andrew, who's been kind of waiting patiently. What's your thoughts on the situation, Andrew? What would you like to say about the state of Norwich City at this moment in time?
I don't think it's going that bad, Connor. I don't know where everyone's getting all head up about. I'll try and lighten the mood a little bit. No, it's shambles. Are the words beginning with S? Everything that everyone said, really. My point is, I don't really want to talk too much about Ben Napper. I think that's... everyone's going to kind of say what they want to say about him, and I get that, and I to a certain extent I agree. The one element about Napa that I've seen that I don't particularly agree with is that the players he signed aren't good enough. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we can say the players he signed aren't good enough, because I'm really, really not sure that they're being coached. I want to say properly, but that's a real harsh thing coming from an amateur coach to a guy who's managed in the second tier in England for the last few years. But I tweeted after the presser on Monday, was it, the pre-match presser? I was concerned with a comment that Manning made. I think it was near 7 minutes into the press conference, because I had to go back and watch it twice to make sure I'd heard what I'd heard, where he talked about the meeting that they'd had on Sunday, and then how he told them that he'd wanted to coach more creativity and more control and more attacking. But basically, because we keep shooting ourselves in the foot defensively, he was sort of intimating that isn't happening. And that's a real concern for me. I remember coming on here pre-season and talking about pre-season seemed like he was working on a defensive shape and out of possession and trying to get us more solid, which was absolutely the right thing to do at that point, considering how last season went. But that comment, after what would have been 9 games after Saturday's game, that he hasn't really worked on attacking. Obviously not a surprise, because everyone's seen the performances and seen that we can't control a game of football, we can't create chances. But to kind of openly admit that was, I think, a really poor statement. The other element of Manning that I picked up on last night actually watching the game, and I've mentioned this to friends during today, is actually just his general body language and demeanor. And don't get me wrong, Connor, like you said, I like the guy as well. I think he's a really good guy. And he comes across like a decent guy. But I feel like we said that 12 years ago about Chris Hughton. He's a really good guy. But what else is there? His body language on the touchline last night for a team that were 1-0 down after dominating that first half like we did. And I seen the comments about Derby being incredibly poor, and they were, but I thought there was a lot of stuff in our performance with the ball that was hopeful. I wasn't going to say, I would say good, but hopeful, because I thought maybe this is the start of something. But at 1-0 down, he was too slow to react to their formation change, which clearly had an impact on the second half. But then just his general body language on the touchline, they kept going to him, and he's just standing there with his hands in his pockets. And as I said to a friend earlier today, if that's me on the touchline at 1-0 down, knowing that my job's really on the line here and my reputation as a good quality championship coach is on the line, I'm jumping about. I'm getting the fourth official pulling me back from being on the pitch. I'm waving my arms. I'm screaming. I'm shouting. There was none of that, even in injury time. And I know we were down to 10 men after Sinas went off. And that, for me, is kind of symptomatic of where we are as a club in terms of even just luck for Sinas to quite possibly get a serious knee injury. But they're showing man and standing talking to Chris Hogg. Chris Hogg sort of says something in his ear, and he just sort of shakes his head, shrugs his shoulders, and just goes, "I don't know." And that was it. And obviously, once we went down to 10 men, we barely saw the ball, which, yeah, kind of shows it all. But just, I don't know if Manning's got the different gears to go into to dig players out, to get people really going. And that's what I'm not seeing. And yeah, I think to rumble on now to Swansea with him still in charge, I think we all know how Swansea goes, and then we're at home to Hull. And if the club aren't going to say anything about it, and he's just going to limp along, then next Saturday against Hull is going to be utterly horrendous at Carrow Road.
Yeah. Well, you've made a lot of really salient points there, and I could pick up on plenty. I think for me the interesting point at the start around the recruitment, and broadly I agree. I think individually, I think there's some good players in there. I think for me, it's probably a point about composition and how balanced that squad is. You know, they've built a squad essentially without any creativity in it. It's very limited in kind of, not obviously Sargent, but the front line behind that. I think that's completely fair. It feels to me kind of like a lot of people and players that maybe, I don't want to say on spreadsheets, because that becomes, you know, quite that seems to be where this conversation gets taken. But I can understand why on various data points there are players that look impressive. But ultimately, it's about the context of that as well, and not necessarily looking at a player who is talented, but also they've got to be a player who's talented within the context of your team. I'll give an example of this. So, you know, there's a lot of commentary around, if we take Max Aarons and Jamal Lewis, who I recognise Norwich didn't sign, they came through the academy, but they've subsequently moved on, and both players have struggled. And I think this is kind of the point I would make. And it's because probably the context that they've gone into, the teams that they've gone into, maybe just haven't suited them and haven't been built for them, as opposed to that Norwich team under Daniel Farke, where, you know, I was speaking to someone the other day who used to work in Norwich's academy and work with Max, and the feeling was that he only kind of works and fits in with a certain type of team, for example. And that, for me, is the big point, that, you know, Norwich maybe need to become a bit more defined in terms of those players that they're signing. I'll bring Sam in terms of some of those points on Liam Manning. I mean, a lot of that, Sam, I think it is fair. I think we've seen Liam try and be quite balanced and try and be quite level-headed in terms of the way that he approaches things. I think that's kind of what we see from modern coaches generally a little bit now. What do you make in terms of some of that attacking stuff? Because it felt to me, and I don't want to take everything back to a conversation in pre-season, but it's difficult in the Championship because of the schedule, because of how many games there are, and midweeks and international breaks at this stage. It can be really difficult to have a really good block of training on the grass at Colney, where you're able to implement a lot of these ideas. That's why pre-season is so crucial. And if you don't get it right, and if you don't build those ideas, it can become problematic for you into the season. Are we seeing a little bit of that to kind of build on Andrew's point?
I think that's part of it, but I also just think I think there are various factors, but for me, the bigger one than pre-season, and I recognise there were probably faults with pre-season, and it maybe didn't work the same way that that maybe Liam Manning would have chosen if he could have. But I think the bigger concern for me is that, you know, the level of recruitment. I think as a broader point, you look at them bringing in 12 senior signings and saying that their ambition was promotion within one season. I think for a few reasons that feels ambitious, but certainly when you're trying to build that relationship between players and you're trying to create a little bit of attacking fluidity, when you sign 12 new ones, I think trying to kind of get them all together and get them used to playing with each other, I think that's really difficult with such a high volume of players. So I think that's part of it. I also think, to be honest, that you just have to look at Liam Manning's career so far. Bristol City fans didn't feel that it was a particularly attacking style of play, even though they actually scored loads of goals last season. I don't think many of his teams have looked particularly proactive. And even when Norwich have been more on the front foot, looked more dangerous, it's mainly been as a result of pressing rather than sort of dominating the ball and creating chances by passing it through the thirds. And that was actually where I thought in the first half against Derby, again, the context of the quality of the opponents is important. But that was where I found that quite encouraging as opposed to most of what we've seen this season, because I thought they were passing it through the thirds quite well and they were finding good spaces and interacting with each other. And there was a good amount of rotation, which I think I like
the shape as well. It was more,
yeah,
because Kenny was at left back, that became a bit more of a free topic, drifted out, it became a diamond that kind of stretched Derby, who, yeah, let's be honest, were very poor as well in that first half. But it allowed them to get the ball a lot quicker into Josh Sargent and into their frontline players. They probably didn't create enough with that, but at least there was something different about what they were trying to do.
Yeah, and I think having McLean there also helps because he's just got the quality at the back. I think they have got some modern defenders, particularly sort of Jose Cordoba, in terms of that pace element, but I don't think they've got many. And I think to be fair, you picked out the stat on one of our podcasts that his progressive passes are by far and away the most of any player, but I still feel like McLean is the best passer they've had in that defence all season. So even though it probably isn't ideal for a few different reasons in terms of them having the ability to pass through the thirds and construct attacks in that way, I think having McLean in there was really good. But for me, the worry is whether we see it replicated, because, you know, I thought there were some good signs of pressing against West Brom and Ipswich, and then against Bristol City, they completely vanished. And I thought earlier on in the season, they looked fairly solid defensively, and then those qualities vanished and they started conceding soft goals. So to be honest, even though we've seen it and it was encouraging, the bit I'm doubting now is whether they can go on and replicate it consistently, because all of the good bits we've seen this season, few and far between as they have been, they haven't really been replicated on a regular basis. So that would be my worry, even though there were some encouraging signs on the ball against Derby.
Yes, absolutely. Sorry, Andrew, did you want to come back in there?
Yeah, just on that point that Sam's just made at the end there about kind of things being few and far between, that again screams to me that they're not being coached in that kind of repetition mold during the week. And I watched Kenny's interview after the game, and to be honest with you, Connor, I thought you're gonna have to give him a hug, because he looked like a broken man. But he said about how hard they worked during the week, and I don't think there's anybody on here who would doubt that the players aren't working hard in training. I don't think you can label that. It doesn't look like a team that can't be asked. But it just looks to me like a team that isn't getting that consistency of, right, this is what I want you to do with the ball, and this is what I want you to do with the ball in that attacking area of the pitch. There was that chance last night for Stacey towards the latter part of the first half, which was a very similar move to the move that got him in behind at Stoke. Mm. Where it went into McCarmon, back to Mattson laid it through. For Stacey, it was basically the same move. But the fact that I can only say that I've seen that twice this season shows me that they're not working on that consistently enough so that it becomes second nature. And that's my biggest concern. And then, like I say, the rest of it just falls down.
Yeah, I think that this has been a point for me. I've heard Liam Manning speak a lot about empowering players, which is a fine concept to an extent, but I think you also need those ideas. And, you know, if a group is clearly struggling in the way that Norwich's are, I think you're right. It does feel like they probably need not their handheld and to kind of guide them through it, but they at least need some frameworks and some, like you say, repetition as to how to unlock some of those problems, to simply put it all on the players, particularly if that creativity doesn't come naturally. I think you then have to try and create that through, like you say, Andrew, coaching. We've got a few guys who've been waiting, so thank you to Shane and to Ashton. We'll come to you very shortly. Let's come to Alex first, though, who's been waiting the longest. Alex, thank you very much for joining us, my friend. What would you like to say about the state of Norwich City tonight?
I think what's most concerning to me more than anything is just how we're consistently in the same position year after year. It's the repetition. Ever since we got promoted in 2021, it feels like every decision we've made, or almost every decision that we've made, just hasn't worked out. And, you know, at some point, we've got to look at the people who are running the club. We've got to look at the higher ups. You know, when Weber lost and when Weber left, sorry, and Napa came in, that was supposed to be the big change. That was supposed to be right, moving on from the old guard, moving into a new era. And obviously, there was some other positions around the club that changed as well. But like the actual core, like the boardroom core of Zoe Weber, the financial guy, I'm not quite sure on his name.
Anthony Richards.
Yeah, there we go. Neil Adams, you know, club legend Neil Adams, but they're all still there. It's really still the same core of people that are at the club, and they've been making decisions. And for a long time now, their decisions haven't gone right. And, you know, I don't want to call for anyone to lose their job. Obviously, they're very hardworking people, clearly. They're clearly industry professionals, and they know far more about what they're doing than I would ever do. But at a certain point, we've got to look at this and say, okay, we keep trying. It doesn't even feel like we're trying different things anymore. It's like Liam Manning's ethos is the exact same to what we had under Dean Smith. And that ended horribly last time. That was horrible. It was an awful time. And we're trying to go just through the same thing again. And did not at one point, you know, one of the people that was still at the club at the time when we went through that thing, not think to say, we tried that, really didn't work. It's just like, yeah, I don't know. I think at a certain point, you've got to look at how the last 5 years have gone and how the next 5 years look if we stay doing what we did the last five. And at the moment, it looks like we're going down to League One. So clearly, we're going backwards, not forwards. The people at the top need to take the accountability for that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it feels to me like you're sort of talking about a exec level that has gone a little bit stale. Is that fair to say?
Because, yeah.
And this is the point that I've made to people, because you look at actually that exec. I'm not talking ownership level, the step below that, and beyond. The sporting director, and that was Stuart Weber, now obviously Ben Napper. That's the only person really that's changed in those positions in that time frame that you speak of, and that's someone who left of their own accord.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's in any business, in any company, you will have a natural churn, and people will change, and you'll get new faces, new ideas in. At the end of the day, these people, they've served the club for many years. Sometimes they've got stuff really right, sometimes they've got stuff really wrong. But at the end of the day, we can't keep going like this. We can't keep doing what we're doing because it's just not working. And at a certain point, you just need to say the common sense answer is we just have to change things up a bit. And if that means losing some faces that have been here for 8-9 years, so be it. But we've got to start moving forward. We can't keep going on this repeated cycle.
Some interesting thoughts. Let's bring Shane in. Shane, are you of the same view as Alex in terms of where those changes need to be made in order for Norwich City to shake off this? I want to say it's a bad run, but it feels like it's probably significantly worse than that. Hopefully Shane can join us. He might be on mute, my friend. There should be a button in the bottom left, hopefully, if you can get that. If not, then we will go to Ashton. I'll put the same question to him. Ashton, I don't know if you're there and you'd like to...
Hello.
There we go. Hello, my friend. Same question for you, really, just to pick up off the back Alex's point, but he was clearly making a point about the wider kind of exec level and where maybe things haven't gone right. Are you of the same view, or are you sort of, I don't want to use the word pointing the finger, but are you looking in a different direction at when, look, there's plenty to choose from, let's be honest, about where Norwich City find themselves at the moment?
I think it's a combination of things. You can look at stuff falling off the pitch, but ultimately it's a group thing. It's not just behind the scenes, it's on the pitch as well. And I think at the minute, Manning's the one getting all the blame, where it's a group thing. So we can look at some things and say, right, the injury department, you know, where players do it. Clearly that's not been working. Look at the last 3 years. We've signed 3 left backs and they've all been injured for long amounts of time. Yeah. That is happened to us season in, season out. So that needs to be addressed. You know, you look at last season, the amount of injuries we had last season, it was unprecedented. You know, we had a whole bench near enough of academy kids. That's unprecedented. So maybe we need to look at that, and then we need to look at recruitment, the players we're bringing in, do they have an injury record? Or do we need to look at the head coach and see maybe if he needs to change some stuff up? And in terms of where we're going as a club, I believe in the Norfolk Holdens and the Antonasios. I do think in time they will make the right decisions. But at the moment, they've never owned a club of this size. Yes, they've done big things in America, but it's different over here. And you look at, I hate saying this, we look at Ipswich. They had the new owners, I think, when they went down to League One, the new American owners. And it took them time to get where they were now. And I hate comparing us to them, but sometimes you have to give the owners time, new owners. Under Delia and Michael, they've been in it for 20 so years. They knew what they were doing. I think we have to give Antonasio's and Norfolk Holman Group time. However, this is not sustainable and we are looking League One right in the face. And we're not too good to go down. Look at Luton, Birmingham. You know, recent teams in recent memory who have gone down there. Sunderland, you know, they're now in the Premier League. They went down to League One, back-to-back relegations. There's no reason why we can't go down. There's also no reason why we can't maybe turn this around. But at the minute, we're just heading one way and that's League One. And it's really unfortunate. I was really angry last night and I'm not sure if anyone has seen, obviously, the Shane Duffy comments, but that really, I think, ignited the fire as well, which, you know, I don't know the full context to it, but I saw a tweet and for me, I love that players come out, but there's a time and a place. And right there, right now, was not the right time, in my opinion. But I think it's definitely a more group collective. It's players, it's staff, it's manager, it's people above, the owners. We all need to... They all need to communicate, find solutions, and the people have to do their job because they're not doing it properly. That wouldn't run anywhere else. If you're in an office, you're not doing your job properly, you'd be gone. Simple as that. And I think maybe we do need to have a little bit of, you know, a little bit of nastiness, because if we want to get back to the Premier League, we've got to make those really tough decisions.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to kind of expand on one of those points you made, specifically around the head coach, because I'm sure people will have watched Monday Night Football or seen some of my Monday Night Football. Gary O'Neill, of course, former Norwich player, was also linked with the job in the summer. He made some really interesting comments, I thought, generally about the role of head coach. In terms of, and this is what he said, I think the role of a head coach is maybe not the most important thing at a football club. I think the structure is so important. He was kind of given the example of Keith Andrews. And, it, you know, is Keith Andrews a mile better coach than Nuno? Probably not. But because of where the two clubs are at the moment, it definitely looked like that for 90 minutes this evening.
Oh, yeah. West Ham are an absolute mess. You know, I mean, you look at us to, you know, compare us to, I know, Millwall. Millwall, all due respect, are not deserving to be in the top six, but they've got a good structure. We're a better team on paper, but we have no structure. And that's the thing.
Well,
we have a better manager.
Sorry to jump in. You could even go back to 18-19 and you look at what Norwich built there. That was the structure that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. You knew you had, what, Godfrey, either Closer, Zimmerman, you know, you had Lewis, Aarons, you had Krul in goal. And then that was the back line sorted. You then had, you know, an Alex Tete, a Tom Tribal, a Leitner, you know, a Kenny McLean in midfield. And that was the structure. We knew that we could rely on that midfield. And I think the midfield we've got now, I mean, Kenny McLean's 33 years old, and bless, you know, his interview last night, he generally looked upset. He looks annoyed. And he's like, I need to look back at myself and make sure I can lead the team properly. And he's been one of my most lawless players in my recent memory. And he's always come out and said it how it is. He looked a broken man. And I kind of just want to sit there and say, like, mate, it ain't your fault. You know, yes, you're the captain, and maybe in some ways he could do more. But at the end of the day, you can't physically go tell a player to go do what's right. It's down to the players themselves. And I think that's also where I do sympathise a little bit with Manning, because clearly I don't think half the time half the players aren't listening. Half the players that are trying, and we know the ones that are trying, like your Jack Stacey's, like your Kovacevic's, like your even Harry Darling. I know he's had a few rocky games, but he looked very good last night, in all fairness. You know, you've then got players like Josh Sargent, who's feeding off scraps, Oscar Schwartau, you know, even Mahovo when he's fit. You know, there is some good players in there who have got and can take us to, you know, competing in the top six, you know, competing and fighting for our lives. But at the minute, we've got so many players who just don't look up for it. I don't think they've got the mentality. I think that comes down to not only the manager, but recruitment.
Yeah, some really good points raised there, Ashton. Thanks for that.
No worries, mate.
Sam, just to bring you in on some of what Ashton has said there, I think the head coach point is an interesting one, because I think in particularly it feels maybe now more than ever, maybe it has always been the case, I don't know, but it feels particularly now like immediately problems, kind of immediately everyone turns to the head coach. And I think those Gary O'Neill comments kind of paint a really interesting picture, don't they, in terms of actually maybe how it should be broader beyond that, and it should be the wider structure that we look at in terms of the way that clubs operate. Do we get a little bit too fixated at the moment with head coaches and when everything isn't going right or is going right, you know, suddenly there it's that sort of saying, isn't it, you hero to clown very quickly?
Yeah, maybe. And I mean, for one main reason, that's quite understandable, and that's because they're the ones in the press conferences every week. They're the ones who fans see very clearly on the touchline shouting at the players. And, you know, you think about the history of English football, it's relatively new that sporting directors have had that level of responsibility. You know, for most of Norwich fans' lives, they'd have been told the manager or the head coach was the kind of most important person, and I think that explains a bit of it. But to be fair, I feel like most fans that I speak to recognise that even if they have problems with Manning and they don't think Manning is the right head coach, that those problems do go wider than just him. And I think actually that's where sometimes the conversation isn't a binary whose fault is it? It's either Ben Knapper's or it's Liam Manning's. It could also be true, and I'm not completely writing them off yet, but certainly this is the way it feels at the moment. It can also be true that, you know, the sporting director and the head coach can be the wrong people for the jobs at this moment in time. So I feel like, although, yes, you do have to definitely look beyond Liam Manning, and certainly the point that I keep raising is the recruitment, and ultimately I do think that the quality of players is the most important characteristic in football. And obviously so many other things are really important, but I do think the quality of the squad is the most important thing in the teams that are successful and get promoted out of the Championship. But I think as much as you've got to look beyond Manning, you can also say it could be a problem with him as well as other things going on. There could be a big structural problem. It could be Ben Knapper. It could be, you know, unrealistic expectations, and it could be the communication that went into the start of the season. But all of those things can be true at once, and all of those things can be weighed up and contribute to Norwich's current struggles. So, yeah, I think we do have to look beyond this orthodoxy that probably most English football fans and, you know, football fans probably across a lot of the world have grown up with, that football managers and head coaches are the responsible people, but that doesn't mean that they don't have any responsibility. You know, it's also possible that Ben Napper could be making a lot of mistakes, and so could Liam Manning.
Yeah, I tell you what I'd like to say on a broader point, and I guess this probably links it back to maybe where we started our conversation, and I can't take credit for this. It's something that Dan O'Hagan raised a few weeks ago, obviously, who's been of this parish previously and does some excellent work in German football. We speak to him a lot when Norwich sign players from Germany, which has been pretty frequently over the last decade or so.
And yeah.
He made the point that actually for press conferences before games and I think less so after games, but certainly before games, you do see sporting directors alongside head coaches being asked questions and facing that scrutiny. And I think another point I would make, and this links to what you were saying there, Sam, is, and this is something that I've kind of thought increasingly about over recent weeks. In Ben Napper, look, Norwich have got someone who clearly is very well versed in English football. You kind of look at the roles that he held at Arsenal for a long period of time. You don't stay at a club like that if you're not switched on. But also, it is fair to say this is the first time that he's been a sporting director. And sometimes I just wonder about the level of support that there is for him and in terms of some of the decisions that are being made. Does he have enough people there to not just seek counsel from and advice from, but also to challenge him and to question some of those decisions that he's making in a positive sense, in a good sense, because I can imagine that becoming quite a lonely role pretty quickly for somebody who's never done the job before to be faced with some very difficult decisions at what is a big club with big pressure. So ultimately, we'll never know the answer to that. But yeah, hopefully that support network is there, because I think there is maybe an argument and a feeling that potentially that there's a lot of autonomy and a lot of power that comes with that, and you just hope that is in to link it probably back to where Ashton was talking about the overall structure as well. Let's bring Cal into the conversation because he's been waiting in the background for a little while. Thanks for holding on, Cal. I really appreciate you joining us this evening. What would you like to say on all things Norwich City?
Hi guys. Thanks for time and all the work you guys do.
Thank you.
Just setting the scene of where we are. I think we're all in it, aligned here. We've got poor performances, especially at home. 2 years into a rebuild where it hasn't gone as everyone expected. All the mood is bad. And where does this come down to? I feel like I am in the camp of a full reset. I think that whenever I play out these scenarios, I'm thinking, okay, what can the Atanasios do going forward? You get rid of one, whether it's in the executive board. It seems like the responsibilities have to eventually fall down between all of them. And the discussion, which I'm hearing everyone saying, is this will be chaos. The argument against this, it will be chaos and too much disruption. But I'm very much on the point of view is that actually the window is closing and shrinking fast to stop this sinking ship. And it's not missing playoffs. We're talking about going into League One now. Then that will mean a much more expensive and disruptive event on the club as the owners themselves. And essentially, I think the accountabilities we need to... This is an opportunity to really establish the accountability, identity, ambition of Norwich. I think there was huge mistakes in communications right since JHT was involved. But this whole going for top six and also being in line with a strategy of buying players from abroad, which are young with no experience, they just don't seem to align at all. If we're going to have that identity, we need to then you have the players and you have much more longer term ambition. It's not something which will have young foreign players with no championship experience and we'll get into the Premier League. That just doesn't happen. So I think this strategy and communication has clearly been wrong. And if we have this full reset, maybe this is something that we can actually define what is... bringing in as well the fan engagement a little bit more, but we could actually maybe define like, okay, and I hate bringing up this stuff of what is the Norwich DNA, and it makes me think of all the Premier League clubs talking about, I know, what is the West Ham way and everything, but it would be, we knew it with when we had when we had it going well with Norwich, everyone was aligned in the whole club. It was the fans. We knew how we were going to play. We brought in the players. We had some of the youth people coming in. But I guess now going forward, this is what I just think this is a really good opportunity for the Atanasios and to say, like, look, yeah, we've got it wrong and we've got a lot of things wrong over the last couple of years. But this is now an opportunity to make it right. Let's change the things, open up the communication. Let's have our short-term, medium and long-term goals. Make sure that everything else is aligned with this. So whether it's the profile of players that we buy, whether it's the style of play, we're going to play with, high pressing with or with possession like we were under JHT, whether we're going to sign players which are young and technical and it's going to be value driven, but obviously we're going to have to integrate this in the team. So it won't just be all in one, like Atlanta do, for example, on the continent. But just making sure that every decision that the club makes, it actually reflects that identity, which really hasn't been showing now. And when I look at the people in their roles of what they're doing, unfortunately, Liam Manning is on the receiving end of this and maybe isn't 100% culpable for this. But if I look at the executive board, Ben Napper, all of these decisions, they just seem to be so scattered. And I think this really is a moment for the ownership to come in and say, right, they could be good people, they can be nice people, but clearly as a business, this isn't working and it's going in one direction. And we have this opportunity to make a change and maybe we should take it.
Yeah, some fantastic points there, Cal, definitely. I mean, just to sort of come back to you on one point, because and you did kind of touch on this, but the counter, I guess, to that would be, well, it's October. You can't really blow the whole thing up and sack everyone in October, for example. If you got rid of Ben Napper, Liam Manning at the same time, who would then go about leading your football department? Who would lead the search for the head coach? Who would pick up a lot of those mantles? I guess maybe the non-footballing side in season is perhaps a little bit easier to kind of blow up and give a root and branch change to, if we're talking about it in those terms. So what would be your comeback to maybe people who would be of that view, that actually maybe at this stage of the season it is impossible to do that and to make so much change in this period of time?
Well, I guess then I look at, well, if that's the case, then we just accept that we're a sinking ship and we're going down to League One. If you're so convinced that, or not you, but if you're convinced that the people aren't up to their roles, or things haven't been done correctly, or they're not right people for the roles, and we're in this trajectory, then we have to accept that. Okay, then we are going to go for a big rebuild. We write off this season, I do think as well that I think communication has been such a big issue this year. Everything with the fans, internally, it seems to be an issue, and it seems very clear that there is no way forward, or no clear direction which they're trying to get. So I think this is really a good point to just come out and say, like, look, with honesty, we can say that it hasn't gone as we expected, this 2-year project. We're going to have a hard reset now. We're not going to keep doing what we have been doing, because we can see this is going wrong. And this is what we're going to do to go forward. I think this is the kind of thing which, as a fan, I want to hear. And I think as well, if I was the Atanasios, I would want to be hearing something similar as well, that hands up, look, we know we've done this wrong and we need to make some changes. And I think this is clear that it's not just a bad run of form of 6 games. And there has been, I have to say, sort of Manning spoke about, we've not been nice. And I know you guys have said that we've been too nice as players. I think these things are sort of distractions from what are the real big problems, because at the end of the day, everyone's always said this about Norwich. Away fans have always said this about Norwich. So maybe this is something we should incorporate in our DNA, in our definition of what we're trying to build, that maybe we're not going to change that and you can't change that. And maybe we should incorporate it and bring it in as a way going forward as a football club.
Yeah, Cal, that's fantastic. Thank you very much for making those points in the way that you did. Really appreciate that, and some excellent points made. Sam, to come back to you, because I know you're going to have to head off in just a moment. We will be continuing, because I've got Jamie waiting in the wing, so we will come to you in a second, Jamie. But Sam, very, very quickly, Shane Duffy, I think let's speak about that quickly, because there's clearly been some conversations today. He's of that social media activity last night. He subsequently issued an apology today. I guess in the circumstances of where we're at from an Norwich City perspective, we probably didn't need this situation on top of it as well.
No, and I think that was the... it kind of put a horrible cherry on top of a very sour and disgusting cake, to be honest, at the end of last night. To be honest, I can't really add anything that people aren't already thinking and that people haven't already said. But when you've got one of your senior members of the dressing room behaving in that way, particularly towards fans who are ultimately the only people who I think can look at themselves and say that they haven't contributed to this mess that Norwich City are currently in. I think probably everyone who saw those tweets will have been shocked that a Norwich City player currently being paid by the club was coming out and not only, you know, coming back at fans, because I think in some ways that can be seen as healthy if you do it in the right way.
Let's bring an example of doing it in the right way. Liam Gibbs on Saturday, engaging with
fans. Sorry. No, it's a good point. And it's, he kind of did it in the right way. And then you see Duffy doing it. And the words he used, it's obviously very, very poor. He's obviously apologised today. And that's a small step in the right direction. But when you've got, how old is he now? 33-year-old man who's played hundreds of games in the Premier League, let alone across all divisions in his career. I don't know what he's thinking, because he must have been through periods like this before. He's probably been through periods like this at Norwich before. We all know the personal mistakes that he's made and the criticism that he's had for that. So I don't know why he was so particularly moved by this one situation in a game where he wasn't playing in a team that he hasn't been a part of for a long time, to behave in the way that he did last night. But certainly it took things from, and you used the phrase to me earlier, I hope you don't mind me saying, of it being a sort of, it feeling like a banter era. And that's the sort of situation that takes it from just being some poor results to that sort of banter era, when you got those sorts of silly things going on. I think it just added another level to a really, really horrible situation last night. And even though he has obviously made serious mistakes before, and I know he gets a lot of criticism for maybe his character at times, I was still absolutely shocked when I read that a Norwich City player was actually... behaving in that way, particularly right after a loss.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Really appreciate it. Go and enjoy the rest of your evening. Yeah, I mean, look, you can only speak to how you find people, right? And I've interviewed Shane Duffy on a few occasions, and I've always found him to be a very good human being, very good to talk to, very articulate in the way that he puts across some of his arguments, whether you agree with them or don't. I think also generally the noises that you hear is that he has been a good person to have in and around the place, and is liked by the players. And I think also I'm always really conscious that, to an extent, and Liam Manning spoke about this as well, we can dehumanise players, and they do have emotions and feelings. But I think, as Sam said there, it's often about how you express that, when you express that, and the way that you decide to express that. And yeah, I think irrespective of if you agreed with the original tweet or didn't, that to see a Norwich player do that in this moment, I just don't think it helps anybody. It's a shame ultimately, because it's created another distraction and maybe added another question mark that we didn't really need at this stage. Sadly, we've lost Jamie. I think we maybe held him on for a bit too long, so apologies for that. Chris, let's come back to you if you're still there and you have
I'm still here.
Good man. I guess look, it's a big question, isn't it, in terms of what needs to happen now. I mean, as I think Rob Butler tweeted yesterday or earlier, Liam Manning is set to do his press conference as normal at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So there's no imminent change. I mean, the feeling is that there's a lot of injuries and maybe they're contributing to where Norwich City are at this moment in time, and that a few of those players, some of whom could return on Saturday, we'll obviously await to see what Liam says about some of that tomorrow, that will give them maybe the boost that they need to get things going. What's kind of your view on that? Is it too simplistic an argument to make that actually this is all down to injuries? Do you think it's bigger than that? It feels to me like the conversation that we've had maybe over the last hour points to a lot of people feeling that it is not all down to injuries in this instance.
No, it's not. And I'm wondering, are the American owners being kept in touch with what's going on, how bad things are at the moment? Do you know if they have been?
Well, the line is officially that they are in contact pretty much daily with the people that matter. I think it's thought, and from what I understand, there will be a trip pretty imminently to the UK. So I'm sure that will be helpful, and hopefully that is sooner rather than later. There's obviously an AGM on the horizon as well, so we might see them over here for a bit of a longer period, which feels necessary. But yeah, officially, to answer your question, yeah, the Marc Athanasio, Ben Napa, Zoe Webber are all in touch, and are all in touch pretty frequently.
So going onwards, Connor, as a reporter in that, and close to the ground, how long do you think they'd let this go on if we weren't picking up wins, in your view? We can't keep losing. What do you think would be the tipping point?
Yeah, it's a good question, because I've kind of felt like we've been there already, maybe two or three times. I think it's interesting because, and this is where, and I've seen some people raise this elsewhere, so it's not a unique thought, it's not a unique bit of analysis, but I must say I'm a little bit surprised there maybe hasn't been a bit more willingness to try and put someone on the ground that is their own person. Because I think when you're a little bit distant, you can kind of, like we said earlier, really, and I'm not doubting that these guys care, because they do. Yeah. And from conversations I've had with them, I can tell you they do. Yeah. But equally, it's about, for me, do they have the confidence to step in? Because I think if I try and put myself in their position, and look, it's impossible to know what they think and what they feel. But for example, if I had the money to go and invest in a baseball team, for whatever reason, I don't know a lot about baseball. So I probably would want to lean on people who did know stuff about baseball, or who I had employed to know things about baseball. So my point is, like, do they have the confidence, the courage, actually, to step in when, you know, Marc Athanasio was on our podcast in the summer and kind of spoke openly about the fact he's still coming to terms with what the game is and looks like and understands. And it's a good thing, ultimately, that they're kind of learning and taking the steps. But also, I think it can make you reluctant and maybe have less conviction when you do need to step in. So that's one point. Yeah. And I think also, because of the distance, the natural distance that there is in terms of them being based in the States and not having a person on the grounds here, it does allow certain, and I'm not saying they're wrong narratives, but I think you could maybe, if you were speaking to Ben Napper, you could talk about the injuries with a lot more. And when personally, I feel performances at the start of the season with some of those players weren't that great anyway. So my point is, I think you can kind of fool yourself a little bit when you're distant is what I would say on those two points. So what does it come down to? Look, like you say, they can't keep losing games. That cannot happen. Norwich City cannot be in the relegation zone for long. So
would these Americans be in on it if they were the worst to happen, get relegated, to be still here?
Well, the line has always been they would be. But again, as I think Cal made the point earlier, it would be a very expensive event for them. And let's be honest as well, it would be a very embarrassing event for them. So soon into their ownership. So
that's a bit of not letting things continue. That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, completely. And I think again, it's always difficult because the sense at the moment, and look from their perspective, you look at what they've done in baseball. Again, I'm not particularly well-versed. If someone is more well-versed in baseball and would like to come on and explain it a bit more to me, that would be greatly appreciated. But equally, you look at kind of what they've done at exec level, they haven't had a lot of churn and a lot of change. And that isn't the policy that they've adopted. They have given people time, and it's been more about building processes and stability, trying to help those people to flourish, even when that's come with a lot of criticism. So that probably feels like what they're going to go for here, in my view. But yeah, like you say, it's football's very different in that I think, as we discussed earlier, head coaches can be put under the microscope a lot quicker and a lot more ruthlessly than perhaps the alternatives are in baseball at a point. So that's all very interesting to see how it evolves and how it changes, I think, over the coming weeks. I mean, Do you agree? Do you feel there's been a tipping point already? Do you think there's one on the horizon that maybe is obvious?
Well, I know we've got different owners now. Going in the past, and we'd always accuse Delia for hanging on for managers too long, but this is a bit unique, really, because as we know, it's results business, right? And you keep losing, There's momentum going down, and generally, the only way that changes. It doesn't always change because you can get worse. Is if a manager changes, but if there's a thing out today about they're still talking about having the fan zone in either regardless of whether we're in League One or not. So they're under no illusion that we could be in League One next season. I think it was in one of the papers. It said we'll still be having the fan zone if we live. So I think they're in tune how serious things are, but how long they want it to go on. I don't know, because as you know, Connor, a lot of managers would have lost their jobs by now at these bigger clubs in the Championship with these results.
Well, absolutely, and again, it's that juxtaposition, isn't it, of how quickly you dispense of Johannes Ovtorup,
and that's what I'll go back to the start,
and maybe now. So some really interesting points there, Chris. Thank you for
cheers, Connor. Thanks
for making. I really appreciate you coming on. Just to kind of end the evening, because we've come up to the hour mark now, and we like to keep these sort of relatively short and snappy. An hour's not short and snappy, but you get my point. But I did want to touch upon some of the comments that we've had. So thank you to the 15 of you guys that have put them in below. I'll start with Colin. I was hoping to get Colin on earlier, but I think he had to rush off. He's commented, "I was there last night. First half, we seemed to rotate the ball back/sideways quicker and with a purpose that created spaces. In the second half, we seemed to forget we play in yellow," and made a point about the away end maybe not being the best environment to be in with his two children. He said, "If we lose Saturday to Swansea, the whole game could be worthy levels bad." Kadan as well, who I think was trying to come on, and for some reason we just couldn't get a connection, which is a shame. "Hey chaps, thanks for all the excellent coverage." Well, thank you very much. "Genuine question, with the squad that is already here, do you think a new manager could configure a different formation and strategy that would gel these players and make us at least equal to the sum of the parts? I'm unsure." I'm also unsure. I think they're ultimately, we probably won't know until/if Norwich City decide to take that plunge, and you know, maybe there'll be a new coach that comes in and doesn't make any difference at all. Some of the issues I think are a bit more ingrained in terms of the squad composition. As I said, I think it doesn't feel to me at this moment in time, maybe that'll change and evolve, but it doesn't feel like a particularly well balanced squad, a squad that's got probably a balance of attributes and characteristics and variation as well, I think, particularly in those midfield areas, to maybe add some of that. Nathan is full of praise for Cal. "Cal needs a voice in front of the club." Well said. Positive spin too. Danny asking about the 1902 group protests. Harry making that point as well about them. They are, an independent supporter group who have, in the last couple of days or so, tried to organise a sit-in protest to take place after full time of Norwich City's fixture against Hull on Saturday, the 1st of November, for the reasons which I'm quoting from their graphic. "Fans being moved away from the seats they've held for decades. Repeated failure in their view from the club's directors, including Ben Napper, Neil Adams, Zoe Webber and Anthony Richens, has led to declining performance on and off the pitch, with no visible plan to prevent a relegation battle. Talk of communication and also broken promises there as well." So I have seen those. I think our news guys have done a story on that maybe today or yesterday, so people can go and see that if they are interested. But it'd be interesting to see what happens with that. Good evening to the Beyond the Barclay podcast, who do some good work. Lee Coates says, "Needs big changes from top to bottom at the football club, but can't see it happening." John Tiponti, I think was on last week, has said, "This has been coming. The model isn't working. Brighton's is. Jar Jar Binks saying, has there seriously been no news? No, there has not been any news, I'm afraid. There's someone listening in from Uganda, so thank you very much for joining us. And then finish off with Stephen's comment. Stephen Mann, who says, leave the club alone. It's going to be a bit of a learning curve after Delia, etc. If we go down, then so be it. We, the fans, have to show solidarity. As for Manning and Hogg, they are the right fit for the job. So that is Stephen's view as well. I don't know if that's been cathartic or helpful. It's certainly been interesting. Thank you so much to everybody who's come on and had their say over the last hour or so. Some fantastic opinions, some forceful opinions, which has been excellent to hear. As I say, we do these every Wednesday. It'd be great to get some new people on to give their views on all things Norwich City. So we'll be back next week after that Swansea game, leading into that whole game, where hopefully we're not talking about a fifth successive defeat, but it feels difficult at the moment to forecast anything positive. Thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday evening. We will be back very, very soon. See you later.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.